From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 2003 when a 15-year-old boy was given a rather remarkable diagnosis. Gabe Weil had been living for years with Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. He was unable to walk at that time after a medical treatment failed to help his degenerating condition. And he had only recently been in the hospital after his heart stopped. It took a firefighter walking down the hallway to intervene, pounding on Gabe's chest to get it started again. That was life for Gabe, and a diagnosis of Duchenne's meant that his life expectancy, he was told at the time, was around his early to mid-20s. But now, at age 15, a doctor was saying that his diagnosis was wrong, that he could live to age 50. And Gabe had some decisions to make. It makes us all wonder, what would you do overnight if your life expectancy had doubled? Well, Gabe's story is the subject of a film called Gabe, showing tomorrow night at the Little Theater at 6:30. In the film, he remarks that muscular dystrophy made him embrace life in ways he might not have otherwise. In that sense, it's a gift. No time to waste. There is life to embrace, enjoy, explore. And this hour, we're going to talk about that mentality with a man who has Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, part of our dialogue on disability. And let me welcome them now. My guests include Jonathan Piacentino, who's a graduate of Nazareth College and a muscular dystrophy awareness advocate. Jonathan, it's nice to see you here.
Nice to see you too, Evan.
Heidi Schuster is here, supervisor of the Adult Dehabilitation Program at CP Rochester. Heidi, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I want to let you know that this is part of our Dialogue on Disability. It's presented as part of Dialogue on Disability Week, a partnership between WXXI and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series. Dialogue on Disability is supported in part by the Golisano Foundation with additional support from the Fred L. Emerson Foundation. Tomorrow night, 6:30 at the Little Theater. It is a free screening of Gabe, that film, and then a panel discussion. So you'll have a great chance to not only see the film, but learn a lot more. Again, it's free tomorrow, 6:30. Hope you'll be there at the Little Theater for that. Jonathan and Heidi will both be there. They haven't seen the film yet, but I know, Jonathan, you'll have a chance to see it tomorrow. And for people who don't know what Duchenne's muscular dystrophy is, what is Duchenne's?
So Duchenne, within the whole category of muscular dystrophy, Duchenne's is one of the most common. So within a normal functioning body, you have a protein that's called dystrophin, and that protein actually holds the muscle fibers to the cell wall of your skeletal muscle system as well as your soft muscle tissue. And in a normal functioning body, when your muscles undergo general damage from, say, exercise or trauma, the protein actually pulls the cell wall layer, which is called the sarcolemma, to the muscle fibers, which are called the sarcomeres, and that keeps the muscle together and allows it to repair. In Duchenne's, you have certain mutations that prevent that protein from being either being produced or being produced but being non-functional. So what happens is the muscle tissue that you are born with is a muscle tissue that you will have for the rest of your life, and the muscle doesn't repair itself. It actually becomes scar tissue over time, and you lose function in your ability to walk, your ability to move, as it affects soft muscle tissue. You also lose some abilities in digestion. You lose cardiac function. You lose pulmonary function, and because of that, you have a very limited life expectancy, and before advances in modern medicine came along, there were you had a life expectancy in your mid-20s because your muscles were so weak that you would literally die of cardiac arrest or, pulmonary dysfunction. You wouldn't be able to breathe, nor would you be able to pump blood, and that's what would essentially do you in.
And medicine now is something I think we'll have a chance to talk about and how it's impacting you. But let me just ask Heidi, anything you want to add? That was a pretty great description there.
You know, earlier we mentioned John's the expert here on this.
Yeah. Very. So, Jonathan, when was your diagnosis?
I was 4 at the time. Believe it or not, it came. I can never remember the exact date. My mom always tells me the story. It was either the 31st of December or the 1st of January the next year. Okay. Yeah, it was around that time.
Okay. Do you remember much? I mean, that's...
I was 4 at the time,
yeah,
but after going to plenty of advocacy conferences and my mom having to... Because usually because my mom is part of an organization that deals specifically with Duchenne's and its counterpart Becker's, which is essentially you have Duchenne's, but the dystrophin protein is still partially functional, so life expectancy is longer and you don't degenerate as quickly. And that organization is called PPMD, but she essentially tells this story over and over again, so I kind of just took in the details. At first, it came along with, because muscular dystrophy, it presents itself in a variety of ways, especially with Duchenne's, it's always a little different. My diagnosis came because I didn't speak until I was 3. I had difficulty walking. My parents thought I was deaf. They enrolled me in early intervention. The doctor said, oh, he's perfectly capable of hearing you. He's just not talking. And what came about was my mom, because she was talking with a pediatrician, and my mother and dad were looking through a book, essentially, of medical diagnoses, and she was looking at different symptoms, and she noticed, excuse me, doctor, my son does this called the Gowers maneuver, where the Gowers maneuver is essentially when getting off the floor, you go up on all fours and you walk back up your legs, up your hips, because your hips are too weak to support your regular weight. So your body kind of adjusts itself. You throw your back, you push your back in and you throw your shoulders back, and that allows you to keep balance. So she said that, and the doctor's like, okay, let me take a blood test here. So she took the blood test and said, your son's creatinine levels, and creatinine is a byproduct of muscle wasting from, I forget the function, or not necessarily the function, the mechanism, but just put it simply, creatinine in the bloodstream is a measure of muscle degeneration, and, either from the healing process or creating new muscle tissue. So she said, concentration of creatinine is such and such this concentration, and it was like off the charts high, like way above normal. And my parents were like, well, what does that mean? What does that mean in layman's terms? And the doctor said, well, we need a muscle biopsy to confirm it. So they took a muscle biopsy, and I still have obviously I have the scar in my thigh. And the diagnosis came, your son who has Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. It was 1997 at the time. There wasn't much you could do about it. It's not really that well known. And for the people that did know, it was like, well, what now? What do we do? This is a degenerative disease. We don't know what to do. So my parents kind of became, all right, well, we have to educate ourselves. So they went digging and, they found a lot of drugs that were not really in the experimental phase, but they were more along the lines of they're being used, but because they've only been recently used as treatment, we don't know what the long-term consequences are going to be. So it was basically taking a gamble, and here we are at the age of 23.
For you, you were able to, I've read, attend Boy Scout camp.
Yes.
Mobility, as is probably a normal course, but mm-hmm. someone with this diagnosis declined over time. But tell me a little bit about your childhood, what you attended, what you were able to do, and then how things started to change.
Mm. Well, I was always the slowest kid on the playground, I can tell you that much. Even as a young kid, I went on a lot of camping trips. I went fishing a lot, boating. I was pretty outdoorsy, so I was attending Cub Scouts at an early age, and that soon developed into Boy Scouts. That was kind of like an outlet in elementary school was the Cub Scouts, because it was being part of a group and actually like a way to make friends. And then that developed into Boy Scouts in middle school, and by the time high school hit, I started attending more clubs because, I don't really know how to put it. I guess because of doctor's appointments and people always keeping an eye on you, it was hard to, like, actually go out and do things. My parents always encouraged me to actually go out, make friends, be part of clubs, be into, essentially be like everybody else. Yes, you're a little slower. You do things a little differently, but don't let that stop you. And, you know, over time, as the challenges came and as more things changed, it was, all right, well, it doesn't look like you can walk as far as you used to, or you can't hike as far as you used to, but what can we do to keep you as mobile as possible to make sure that you keep up with everybody? And the funny thing was, going with a scout camp, I was still hiking, and I was hiking up trails, up mountains, and I was still doing the long treks through the woods, and it was, okay, you're doing treks, but, you know, you're behind everybody else, but you're still doing the treks just like everybody else. And I know a few times when it came down to it, I was using my dad's truck to get around. You know, he was driving me around, or some of the older guys would take me off the trail and we'd go do another thing while other people were doing the main, event. And essentially it was, we don't want you to be left out, but we want you to be able to do something at your capacity, but still have the experience as everybody else. And that's essentially what it came down to. Even with doing Model United Nations in high school and doing robotics, it wasn't just your parents are helping you out. It's the team is helping you out. You know, your friends on that club are helping you out. They're asking you, you know, what can we do to help you? What can we do to make it a little better so that you don't feel left out? You know, that kind of thing.
Talking to Jonathan Piacentino, who has a Duchenne's muscular dystrophy, and talking about his life with Duchenne's. And I think what we all should understand, I mean, that's the term that not a lot of us really get to know well if there's not someone in our immediate life who has a diagnosis of Duchenne. So he's telling us about this. And as you went throughout high school and then college, what was the progression with your own mobility, Jonathan?
Okay. So believe it or not, all throughout elementary school, middle school, and high school, I was on my feet. In middle school, it got to a point where, okay, I can't carry a backpack anymore, so we'll use a rolly backpack, you know, one with wheels, and that worked out for me because I could roll it around like a suitcase. And then it came to, well, I keep hitting myself with it, and I keep knocking myself down. Okay, well, we'll have someone walk with you and take the wheelie bag so you're not hitting yourself and knocking yourself down, because even though I could walk, I still had, you know, my legs would give out occasionally and I would have to get myself back up. I would be using the walls to brace myself for a chair or whatever. I could still get up off the floor. And then my therapist at school came up with the idea with, I've seen those double-decker shopping carts at Wegmans. I can get you one of those, and that can be like your own personal walker / locker. And that worked out because then I could, I wouldn't have to worry about being off balance. I could brace myself against the shopping cart, and I used that all throughout high school. And then college came around, and it's, all right, well, you're on a college campus now. All the buildings are separated, so you can't get from point A to point B in 5 minutes by walking around with a shopping cart because A, you're not that fat. You're not fat that fast. And B, you would literally get exhausted before the half the day even started. Mm-hmm. So we decided to go with a wheelchair, and I didn't have a wheelchair of my own at the time, so I was using a rental from the MDA loan closet. And then I got my own power chair at the end of the first year. So essentially what it was for the first 4 years at Nazareth, it was a small campus, but I still required the wheelchair to get around. So during the day, I would be in the wheelchair, and then in the evenings, when I commuted back to my house after my dad picked me up, and on the weekends, I would be walking around the house using the furniture to brace myself. That way, I could still keep limber and still retain my ability to walk. Because even when we went traveling, it was, All right, well, you can't necessarily bring a power wheelchair up into grandma's house because she has steps. Okay, then my parents would lift me up the steps and I would just walk around the house like normally. In about middle year of high school, I couldn't really get up from the furniture very well anymore because I would keep slipping because my legs were a little bit weaker. So I always had to ask my parents to, you know, help me up. You know, after an hour and a half, it'd be like, all right, Dad can help me up or Mom can help me up. I'm getting stiff. I need to walk around. I didn't lose my ability to walk completely until I was on the cusp of being 22. And that was actually going on a camping trip, a three-week camping trip, for my senior thesis to go fossil hunting. And as it turns out, when my dad had a bad hip and a bad back, and he was doing all the heavy lifting, he couldn't really stretch me or get me out of the chair that much. So 3 weeks of being stiff, I kind of lost the ability to walk because my legs were too stiff to actually gain, be loose enough to support my weight anymore, so...
But as I've read, 21, 22 years old.
That's amazing.
It is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Most people who have Duchenne's are not walking that late in life. Is that correct?
Yeah. And the walking that late in life is for the added benefit of being on an experimental medication, which I believe is what pushed the limit from, say, 16 or 18. Because I've known gentlemen that were pushing it all the way to 18. Mm-hmm. With nothing but this general steroid and supplement treatment, and with the experimental drug that I'm on, which affects my specific mutation for the lack of dystrophin, that managed to push it to 21, 22. Possibly it could have pushed it longer, but like I said, I was already kind of like on the leaning point of losing the ability to walk, and the camping trip just kind of like sealed the deal in a way. And, you know, that's not... I'm not blaming anyone, you know, stuff happens. Mm-hmm. I just didn't expect it to go like that.
We're talking to Jonathan about his life with Duchenne's, and I want to touch on a few topics that I think are important for all of us to understand and at least try to gain some of his perspective. First of all, you want to become a paleontologist, is that correct?
That has changed.
Okay, all right. Because I know you were a biology major,
yep,
with minors in chemistry and tox.
Yep.
But you were thinking about paleontology. What do you want to do?
I was thinking about paleontology like when I was in elementary school. Ever since I saw Jurassic Park, dinosaurs were always like a big thing for me. And then it went from dinosaurs to anything prehistoric. And because I was always fascinated with like fictional monsters. You know, I'll watch a monster movie no matter how... like inane the plot is or how asinine the plot is, but because I'm always a sucker for monsters, but like looking at prehistory and how organisms have developed, that's like real life monsters for me. So I've always been fascinated with that aspect and how everything evolved and branched out and became what it is today. But I wanted to, towards the end of my college career, I kind of hit like a midlife crisis with, I'm not sure if I want to do this, because watching YouTube channels of people doing, you know, playing video games and doing commentary over them and being fascinated with voice acting work as well, I also want to going into improv seminars with the Village Idiots here before they disbanded it. It's always been, well, I like acting as well. I've never gotten a chance to do any of that, and doing 5 years of college in the sciences field didn't really help. But so now I'm at a crossroads. I'm currently volunteering at the zoo and hoping to be a docent, and I want to keep teaching and learning about animals. I want to keep that interest alive, but at the same time, I also want to explore another facet of my life, because right now, I want to try a YouTube channel. I'm trying to get into writing novels, which, like every person with writer's block and severe procrastination, you say it, but you don't do it for a while, and then you start doing it. And it's like, I don't know what to write because I'm too nervous to put anything on the keyboard. And then, but, you know, I got in touch with a local community theater in Penfield, the Penfield Players, and I'm going to see if I can explore that route as well, see if I can actually be a performer. Because I always read stories of people saying, you know, they went to college for medical sciences or for aspects in the sciences field, but they became actors, such as, I forget the man's name, but he was on that show Community, and he was he played a Spanish teacher, and before he became an actor, he was working 12 years as a doctor. Or the woman that plays Amy on The Big Bang Theory, she has an actual degree in neurobiology, and she's an actor for the show The Big Bang Theory, so, you know.
That's Mayim Bialik, isn't it? I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's legit.
Yeah.
She's legit. And you can see that maybe for yourself.
Mm. Okay. I kind of wanted to always be like Bill Nye the Science Guy, you know, have my own show and teach on television and, you know, kind of be both not so much an expert, but like knowledgeable in the field of science, but, you know, act at the same time. So I'm trying to explore that route right now. I'm juggling a little bit, but paleontology is definitely something that I still want to keep alive because I'm still interested in dinosaurs and I still follow podcasts on paleontology. So
okay,
right now I'm like, where am I going to go right now? There's like three different roads that I want to take.
So you're part of a large population of people struggling with figuring out which route for careers they mm-hmm. want. I want to ask you, and this isn't always a pleasant thing to think about, but Jonathan is somebody who said he's an open book and he's thought about all of this. So I'm not the first person to bring this up, but when it comes to Duchenne's, as you said, early in life for you at the time, a diagnosis of Duchenne's, mental life expectancy early to mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
You're 23. What's the life expectancy expectation now?
I would say late 30s, early 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, the counterpart to Duchenne's is Becker's. And I know some gentlemen with Becker's muscular dystrophy, and they were born in the late 70s. And they're in the 40s now, and that's, you know, 25 years before, you know, that's a good 20 years before the advent of medicine that's specifically targeting Duchenne's and Becker's, because no one knew what the back then they had an idea of what was causing it, but no one knew the exact mutation or the exact mechanism behind what's causing Becker's and Duchenne's, and they didn't know that until the late 80s. And then in the advent of the early 90s, did they start coming up with the steroid treatment with using prednisone and a counterpart to prednisone called the Flazacort in order to treat muscular dystrophy, because the same mechanism that the steroids use to target muscular inflammation also affects the mechanism for slowing the degenerative process of muscle degradation. So with the amount of medication that I'm on, and with the kind of like pushing of my parents, like part of it was the medication regime. The other half is my parents were pushing me to essentially don't let this disease be you. Like, I know it's hard, and I know that it's difficult, but we're right behind you. And if you want to do something, we'll make it happen. But you have to decide that it's for you to do that something. So the combination of my parents' advocacy and close family ties, and with addition of new medicinal regimes, because there's many experimental drugs like in the pipeline, the life expectancy probably went from mid to late 20s to possibly early 40s to late 40s. And in the next 5-6 years, I expect that to double, because not only will gentlemen who are in their late teens and early adulthood be receiving new medication, but children who are receiving diagnosis early will have better intervention in the near future, and that will push their essential prognosis much differently to what the prognosis would have been 15, even 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Jonathan, when it comes to medications, are you satisfied or frustrated with the pace of approval and what's allowed?
A little bit of both. Like, I understand that it takes a while for experimental medication, especially with such a small population, because with my particular mutation that causes my Duchenne's, that's only 15% of the entire Duchenne's population. And when it's within the Duchenne's population, it's one in... I actually don't want to say this statistic because I know I will mess it up. And going home, my mom will definitely yell at me for messing it up, even though she's told it to me thousands of times. It's considered a rare condition, I will say that. So within 15% of a very small population to begin with, it's very hard to approve experimental medication that is targeting that very small percentage. So I'm glad that there has been approval with at least one drug, but I'm also slightly a little bit frustrated that we have to keep going back and forth with the FDA to try to push the approval even further. But I am confident that, because the experimental medications that I'm referring to, they were in the pipeline for the past 10 years, and there were only like 3 or 5 at the time. Now there's up to 60 in the pipeline, both in the early like mouse and animal trials all the way up to early phase 1, phase 2 human trials. And I'm confident in the next 2 to 3, maybe 5 years that those experimental drugs, there will be more options for people to try out. And with more knowledge on how the Duchenne's can actually be studied, then the approval and efficiency in studying these medications on that population is going to be much greater, because the experimental drug I'm on, Adalurin, also known as PTC-124 by PTC Therapeutics, I started it in 2006, and I was on and off because of, you know, different trial sets and
yep.
different accommodations for those trials. At the time, no one knew how to study muscular dystrophy because it was a novel drug with a novel disease target. And that was 10 years of trial and error, what works and what doesn't with how you're studying this condition. So, you know, after 10 years, PTC essentially developed the whole regimen of how you go about studying this disease target with any new experimental drug approach that you have. So, you know, in the past few years, we've had more experimental drugs using that scheme that you could say following that target is a lot easier now because they know what they're looking for. So I'm confident that in the next several years, that's going to be a tremendous help.
But I want to stay on one important point here. So mm-hmm. when you started on that experimental drug, you said because of different trials, it wasn't consistent. You at times had to go off the drug. Is that right?
Yeah. So
and how were you impacted when you went off it?
So the first trial was like called phase 1B, and that was only 37 members, and that was to actually see if it was safe to take for the Duchenne's population. And that was like a pilot study, you know, 30 days on, 30 days off. And then, you know, that was only a month, and it's hard to kind of test to see in a month because there's always the placebo effect. You really want it to work, but mm-hmm. you're not sure if it yep. is working. Yep. So every subtle difference you might see is, oh, that's an improvement, but what if it's, you know, you're just having a really good day?
Yep.
So I didn't really develop an appreciation for it until I went into phase 2, where it was 150 individuals, and that was a year and a half long study. So I did see improvement. My therapist even noted that during high school, you know, she was actually kind of like, all right, well, I see him 3 times a week. Let me do a little bit of a base measurement before he goes into the drug study, and let me see how it turns out throughout high school. So, kind of going off topic here, I'm a little rambling a little bit. For the first 2 months of the phase 2 trial, I couldn't keep the medication down to save my life.
Couldn't keep it down?
I could not keep it down. It was interacting with all the other medications I was taking. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't keep the medication down, and I couldn't keep the food down. I lost 15 pounds in weight. And I felt considerably weaker because not only was I not taking the experimental drug, I wasn't taking the other medications I was on. So by the time we figured out how do we make it taste better, because it was very bitter and it was having a bad reaction. So, you know, we figured out the formula for how much of certain medications I can take without having an upset stomach, and what I can do with the experimental drug to actually take it, because to get over the bitterness, you know, you didn't want to have an interaction with something that you were taking it with. So, you know, it was trying to get it down. But after that, I did see improvement. I was walking farther. I could do more exercises in therapy classes. I wasn't exhausted as much. And then going off of it, because they had to actually truncate the study due to, like I said, novel disease target. You're not sure what you're looking for, so going back to the drawing board.
Were you disappointed to have to go off it?
Yeah, a little bit, but we kind of kept some hidden away.
Oh boy.
So I was supposed to go off of it.
I think the statute of limitations has run out. I think you can tell the story.
Yeah. So I was supposed to go off of it, for good. You know, after I was supposed to go off of it, we kind of lied about bringing it back.
Jonathan, I should warn you. I have someone on the phone who's going to join us in a second. It's your mother, so be careful if you want to tell these stories.
Okay, well, I will say we kept some.
Okay.
And I was taking it kind of like every other day, one small dose every other day. But, you know, that didn't really do anything for it, because my body instantaneously, like, not only digested it, but it also, you know, when you're taking any medication, it's when your body digests it and uses it, it's how much is left that's actually usable in your bloodstream that can be utilized by your body.
So it sounds to me like a snapshot of the medication situation is that you have had a chance to at least be part of a change in the medical field.
Yes.
That since your diagnosis in 1997, 20 years ago, to today, there's been a lot of progress, and that maybe not as much as, not as fast and not as instantaneous as people would understandably hope for, but it's enough to give you hope that life expectancy is improving, quality of life's improving. Mm-hmm. Fair, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's see what your mother wants to say. This is Christine. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
We're great. I'm enjoying the conversation with Jonathan.
I'm sure. He's a plethora of information.
He's actually remarkable. You know, we get a chance to talk to a lot of people who are, you know, in different diagnoses, and Jonathan is among the most educated I think I've ever met, Christine.
I mean that seriously. I wanted to go back because you asked about some facts that I think are important.
She does it better.
Duchenne affects about 20,000 people in the United States. 20,000 to 30,000, as well as worldwide, it affects 1 in 3,500 people, primarily boys, because it is an X-linked recessive disorder. The mother carries it and passes it to her sons. Girls don't normally manifest any. There are some girls that have Duchenne, but normally, because girls have two X chromosomes and boys have one X and one Y, the bad X is usually passed to the boy. On occasion, a carrier mother may have both X's that are affected and would pass the disease on to her daughter.
Well, Christine, I've got to get our only break of the hour coming up here, but before I do that, let me just ask you, you know, if you compare 1997, 1998, you know, those early days of trying to understand what a diagnosis of Duchenne's muscular dystrophy meant to today, and looking at Jonathan and him thinking about careers and having the degree that he has, and thinking about the life and the life expectancy that has increased, how has it changed for you as a parent in those two decades?
Well, when he was diagnosed, I never thought he'd go to college. you know, I never expected that we would be here. And Jonathan's planning what he wants to do for a career. You know, they said I would be lucky if he lived to 20. You know, the prognosis in 1997 when he was diagnosed was wheelchair by 12, ventilator by 15, cardiac issues by 18, by 20 he'd pass away.
You know, he's 23 years old, and he walked almost to 22.
Graduated from college with a biology major.
Yeah.
You know, I never thought we'd be here. However, I will say this. My husband and I have been very aggressive in his care, and we've sought the best. He's on a steroid that's not available, that's not yet approved in this country. When he was younger, I took him to Toronto to see a neurologist there that prescribed the Flazacort. Now it's in trials here. Hopefully will be approved very soon in the U.S. because prednisone really, it wasn't a good option. It's got, it, like any, like prednisone has tons of side effects. You know, it, given my propensity to gain weight, my husband's propensity to gain weight, we kind of wanted to find something that wouldn't puff Jonathan up so much. The deflazacort works like a prednisone, but the side effects come on much later than prednisone. So, and we manage side effects. I mean, you know, this, when you do these different drugs, you kind of walk in thinking, all right, you know, I kind of looked at it like being diagnosed with AIDS. You need a cocktail of things to increase your life. And our focus was quality of life. Let's give him the best life we can possibly have, as much experience as he has, can have before, you know, the good Lord says, see ya, time to go.
Well,
that's how we looked at it.
Christine, can you stay on the line for a second?
Sure.
Let's do this. Let's get our only break of the hour. I'm way late for it. I want to keep Christine on because she's got compelling things to tell us. And I want to remind you about the film that's showing at the Little Theater tomorrow night. It's called Gabe. We'll have a clip for it after we come back from this short break. We'll tell you about that. I also want to talk to Heidi Schuster about the Bell Program at CP Rochester. And I know that Jonathan has knows CP Rochester probably pretty well and appreciates the work that they do. So all of this coming up after the only break of the hour right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the Next Connections. In our first hour, we're joined by Republican Minority Leader Brian Kolb from the New York State Assembly. He'll talk about state business and answer your questions. He'll talk about the governor's free college tuition plan and a lot more. Brian Kolb, first hour. In our second hour, we're talking about what happened in Gambia, what really is going on, and how could it impact a refugee crisis. Talk with you Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. You're hearing the story of Jonathan Piacentino, who's a graduate of Nazareth College, and he's a muscular dystrophy awareness advocate. He is really remarkably knowledgeable. He's been living with Duchenne's muscular dystrophy since the diagnosis that he got at the age of 4 back in 1997. And this conversation is part of our Dialogue on Disability Week, a partnership between WXXI and Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series. Dialogue on Disability is supported in part by the Golisano Foundation with additional support from the Fred L. Emerson Foundation. Tomorrow night, 6:30 at the Little Theater, there's a free screening of a film called Gabe. Now, Gabe Weil and Jonathan Piacentino have, I think, in some ways, interestingly similar stories, but then they diverge at a point. And let me explain, and then you're going to listen to a clip here. Jonathan is telling us about his diagnosis of Duchenne's, and you just heard his mother, who's on the line with us, Christine, say that at the time she was told he would probably pass away by the age of 20, that college wasn't going to happen. Well, Jonathan walked almost to the age of 22. He's a college graduate. He's looking at a life expectancy into the late 30s, maybe the 40s, and with medical changes that are happening, that could even be expanded. It's really been remarkable. Gabe Weil was 15 years old in 2003. He had been diagnosed with Duchenne's at an earlier age. He had already lost the ability to walk. And he had then at the age of 15 in 2003, doctors told him, you do not have Duchenne's. You have muscular dystrophy, but it's not Duchenne's, and your life expectancy is more like 50 years old. So both Jonathan and Gabe have gone through life with an expectation of a shorter life expectancy that changed as they got older. The difference, of course, is that one diagnosed with Duchenne's and that changed, and one, Jonathan's diagnosis has not changed. But I want you to listen to what Gabe had to say in this film. I haven't seen it. Megan Mack, producer, watched it. She said it is a powerful film. And she pulled a clip in which Gabe wrote a letter to muscular dystrophy. And if you just sort of key in and try to listen to what he's saying here, you'll be able to make out this, I think, this remarkable message. Let's listen.
Dear muscular dystrophy, what doesn't challenge me doesn't change me. So obviously, you have seriously changed me. But to be honest, I don't really think about you all that often. I can't even really be mad at you at this point. After all, we grew up together. You have made all physical aspects of my life a challenge. You've taken away so many of my abilities. You took away my ability to walk, then my ability to stand. Recently, you tried to stop me from ever eating solid food again. Despite taking away so much from my life, you've added to it. I appreciate all things so much more than I would if you had never been part of my life. You helped me reach out to find people who would not be in my life otherwise. Sometimes you really scare me. You almost killed me a few times. I fought back. So overall, must have just been. You might as well get used to one another, because neither one of us is going anywhere anytime soon. And who knows, maybe one day somebody will find a way to get rid of you forever. Wouldn't that be incredible, Gabe?
That's from the film Gabe that you can see for free tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Little Theater, followed by a panel discussion. Gabe says, if he's addressing muscular dystrophy, that in some ways it has made him love and appreciate life more than he otherwise would have. Jonathan Piacentino, how do you feel about it?
Well, I'm not quite sure how to put it, but it's kind of become so integrated that I don't really, I mean, I fantasize about what it would be like without it, but, you know, that's just a fleeting fantasy right now. But at the same time, when I think about what if I didn't have it, would I still be the same person? You know, the same, would I still have the same personality? Because part of what I'm interested now and part of who I am as a person now, I don't think I would ever become that if I didn't have such a diagnosis. I wouldn't have that perspective of figuring out the challenge, nor would I have the perspective of someone who's living almost on the cusp between, don't want to be blunt here, but you know, life and death, because you don't have the perspective of, because going, you know, a person who's normal functioning, you know, they would go up to a person who has a diagnosis that they've never ever heard before, and, you know, they ask you all these questions, and, you know, and you answer all these questions, but because of muscular dystrophy and what it is, your answers, you know, it's not like someone who has, not cerebral palsy, hang on, it'll come to me. I can't.
It's okay.
Cystic fibrosis. That's it.
Okay.
So, you know, with cystic fibrosis, it's been around so long, we know the mechanism of it. We know how to treat it. So with the perspective of being with muscular dystrophy, it's you don't know where you are. You don't know how to treat it. Not every doctor is familiar with this syndrome, so you don't have the perspective of preparing for it and figuring out what works for you. So, you know, my interest with dinosaurs and or my interest in being a nerd, you know, that probably wouldn't have come about if I wasn't, if I was like more active or if I was playing sports more because of my diagnosis. I didn't really get involved with sports. It was fishing. It was relaxing with nature, or it was going to the zoo and watching the animals. It was pretty much more observing things. So the personality traits I developed and the friends that I've made, it probably would have been completely different if I didn't have muscular dystrophy and I went through life as a normal functioning human being. So I where I am now and the characteristics that I've developed now, I would have to say I'm both glad for it, but at the same time, I'm not sure if it would be the same if I didn't have it. So I guess that's where I stand on with, you know, my disease currently.
Christine is his mom. And real briefly, Christine, how did you feel about what you heard in that clip from the movie Gabe?
I agree with Jonathan. He would be a totally different person if he didn't have muscular dystrophy, I think. You know, the other thing is, as a mom, you develop sort of the fighter spirit. And some people stick their head in the sand. Other people like me want to learn more, do things, and change the outcome. And that's how we approached it. You know, I agree with Jonathan. Yes, we all don't want this in our lives. It's not fun to live with by any stretch. But the upside is the experiences that he's had and done probably might not have happened if he was normal. I mean, he's met with the FDA, advocated on the Hill, met with our congresspeople in Washington, you know, talked to the senators' aides in Washington to really, you know, get bills passed, get things moving, get the FDA to stand up, take attention, and help us change the outcome for not just Jonathan, but for everybody.
Well, Christine, I want to thank you for calling the program, and good luck to you. Thanks for calling and sharing part of Jonathan's story with us.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And I'm sure, Jonathan, you'll see her soon. Mm-hmm. I've got to ask Heidi Schuster, who I've been wrapped up in Jonathan's amazing story. Heidi's the supervisor of the Adult Dayhab program at CP Rochester, which is what, by the way? Tell us a little bit about the program, and particularly the Bell program at CP Rochester.
Oh, well, thank you, and John, thank you for sharing so much. CP Rochester, great agency. The Bell program was an opportunity that was provided for a partnership between Roberts Wesleyan College, CP Rochester Adult Dehabilitation Services, and the BOCES 2 program. It's an opportunity for individuals to explore college. Those individuals, unfortunately, may have a diagnosis of an intellectual disability or some other form of a developmental disability. Mm-hmm. And a lot like what John's mom said earlier, they didn't think John would go to college. Most of the individuals I work with, their families did not see them going to college either. This is one of the newer programs that affords an opportunity for everyone to go to college and achieve what they're capable of and set their goals a little higher.
What would you want families, parents who may eventually end up with a diagnosis, whether it's, well, I mean, there's so many different things, but, you know, we've been talking about Jonathan's story. This kind of diagnosis, what would you want them to know about resources in the community?
Well, I think the most important thing, regardless of what your child's diagnosis may be, expect great things. Expect them to do everything that you want them to. There are a number of resources in our community. Those resources are dwindling. We're all aware of that. However, I find it to be much like when you distill something. They get richer. There may not be as many resources, but like CP Rochester, there are partnerships forming all over Monroe County. Various agencies, there's many, many agencies in the county. We're using each other to support the individuals that we're serving.
Okay, well, listen, I just want to thank you both so much for your time, and we'll see both of you tomorrow night at the Little Theater, yes? Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Well, tomorrow night, 6:30 at the Little Theater for the screening of Gabe, the documentary we've been telling you about. It is a free screening tomorrow, and following the screening, there will be a panel discussion featuring the director, Luke Terrell, via Skype. Jonathan's going to participate. Heidi's going to be there, and we hope you'll be there as well tomorrow night at the Little Theater. Jonathan, good luck to you. I mean, it sounds like you're, again, like a lot of people trying to figure out what you want to do next, but you got a lot of great options, and I just really appreciate you sharing your story.
Thank you.
Jonathan Piacentino, Heidi Schuster, Jonathan's mother calling the program, joining the conversation. Great stuff. Thanks to all the folks at CP Rochester as well for the great work that they do. Thank you, Heidi. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you have a great afternoon, and we'll talk to you Wednesday on Member Supported Public Radio.